ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चाक्षुर्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपां सागरजातां सहगणा रघुनाथांवितां तां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नाम श्रेष्ठमनमपि सच्चिपुत्रत्वस्वरूपं रूपं तस्य अग्रजा मधुपुरीं मातृं गोस्तवातीं राधाकुन्दं गिरिवरमहो राधिकामारवासां प्राप्तौ जस्य प्रतीतकृपया श्रीगुरुन् तन्मतोऽस्मि आनन्दनीलमाय विग्रहाय हिमावदिव्यश्च विसुन्दराय तस्मै महाप्रेमरसाप्रदाय चैतन्यचन्द्राय नमो नमस्ते कृष्ण यस प्रभु
धन्यवाद महाराज महाराज ए क्वेश्चन फ्रॉम सूज़न कामला लंदन अनदर क्वेश्चन फ्रॉम हर कृष्ण टॉक्स अबाउट द थ्री मोड्स ऑफ मटेरियल नेचर इन द भगवद गीता Goodness, passion, and ignorance. I understand that when we are Krishna conscious, we transcend these modes.
In the moment, Trigunatita means beyond Triguna. Because Krishna says in the Gita, what is it? Trigunya Vishaya Veda. They're mainly dealing that section of the Vedas, or Vedas in general, with Triguna, the three modes of nature. Continuum.
In the moments when I'm not God conscious, which are many.
Only moments. Wow. Hare Krishna.
Which are many.
Oh, which are many.
I feel that
many
I'm.
Many moments.
I feel that I'm in all of the modes at different times. In the early mornings when nature is waking and the day is still, it feels beautiful, but it doesn't last. By the early afternoon, the day is rush, and it feels confusing. And at night, well, that just feels like sheer and utter madness. And going to bed early feels like the only option. Has Krishna designed these modes as some sort of reminder that we are not at home in this material world?
Well, those are good observations because the day roughly divided into sattva, rajatama, and we know, I'm not a mathematician, but everyone is familiar with the concept that there are 24 hours in a day, right? And an hour is 60 minutes. So that means 24 60s. But if you invert that, it becomes 60 24s, correct? 60 24s, right? Or 30 48s. Are you still with me? So, a muhurta is 48 minutes. Just different ways of approaching the same thing. A danda in the time meaning of the word is 24 minutes. Two dandas, because we're told the Goswamis slept chori danda, four dandas a day, means an hour and 36 minutes. Two 48s. Muhurtas. So then that means there are 30 48 minute periods in a day. We're told generally speaking the most auspicious time for spiritual cultivation is the Brahma Muhurta, which begins an hour and 36 minutes before sunrise. Right? which is again 4 48s, right? Or 2 48s. Yeah, 2 48s, excuse me. An hour and 36 minutes before sunrise. So that means, roughly speaking, if sunrise is at 7 a.m., then, you know, six, a half hour, 5:30, something like that, 5 o'clock. And sometimes it's because it changes during the year, the sunrise, and depending on where you are. But we're told to be up by that time and engaged in spiritual cultivation. This used to bring a smile to my face when I was visiting St. Petersburg, particularly in the wintertime, because sometimes the sunrise is not till 10 a.m. So then those devotees could say, we're getting up at 8:30, you know, during the Brahma Muhurta. They could say that, but they didn't. But there may be some odd situations like that, that part of the world, the white nights and such things. But generally speaking, an hour and 36 minutes before sunrise, we're told, be up by that time, engaged in spiritual culture, which may be particular practices. And what are we saying after the 8 verses of Gur Vastakam? What is the next line? Srimad Guru, what is it? Say it louder.
Srimad Guru Rashtakam Etatuche
Brahme Muhurte Pratati Prayatna. So it's saying, if you sing these prayers during the Brahma Muhurta, how auspicious that is, it will be good for you, for your spiritual culture and realization. We've heard that Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, his, in a sense, favorite time, because besides these Muhurta, there's also the days divided into, 6 4-hour periods, approximately. And there's one from around 4 to 8, 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., or 3:30, depending on how you... That we're told, we hear, that he favored that time. In his case, that may have something to do with the Radha Krishna Nitya Leela. That's not our area of concern. But we can understand it in principle. So, roughly speaking, and even as she says, we sense this personally, if you're somewhat sensitive to these things, either by nature or cultivation, that it's a very good time. Things are relatively quiet. There's less going on. You can maintain focus. Whereas by 8, 9, at least in America, there's a colloquial expression about 9 to 5. You know, being a 9-to-5-er, or working from 9 to 5. So that's, that's 8 hours, right? Again, I'm not good at math. And I had my own little dance of joy when I heard Srila Guru Maharaj say, quality gives us relief from mathematics. In other words, quality gives us relief from quantity. What is quantity? A mathematical concern. But quality gives us relief from mathematics, which he also referred to calculation. calculating tendency based on ego assertion or perceived, misperceived personal benefit or misconceived self-interest. But the extended version of misconceived self-interest, family, country, nation, it's like that. Guru Maharaj termed it extended selfishness, another type of selfishness, but cast with in the guise of nobility or noble what is that expression? Noblesse oblige, something like that. Noble obligation. Anyway, extended selfishness. So we find, and these are all rough periods, so up to that early part of the morning, if we can set it aside for spiritual cultivation, that will be very good. Then, after breakfast, the day begins, and that period, roughly up to, 5 or 6 o'clock, and then, I found it interesting, because then it transitions from sattvagun to rajagun, then tamogun. And when Srila Gurudev relocated from at Dum Dum Park, where his veranda was, and the mat, where you could hear all the kirtans very clearly, very loudly, and moved down the street a little ways to the Sevak Bhavan, where you could only hear the kirtan faintly, and he would have his servitors blow a conch shell at around approximately 6 p.m., or when it's starting to transition from sunset to darkness. And it's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam that at that time, bhuts, ghosts, are inspired. They come out and begin doing their mischief. So by blowing the conch shell at that time, we're told that annoys them. They don't like to go near the sound of a conch shell. They flee. So he'd have the servitor, very loud and long, maybe 4 times. So that was interesting to note. And the evening sets in. And we know that for many people, the evening is a time of intoxication. And that intoxication, the different stages goes from what they call, with a specific reference to drunkenness, but not limited to, but it comes to mind. They say the happy drunk in the early saints, then the sad drunk, then the angry drunk, and then violent. So don't take my word for it. Google it. They have statistics on everything, and you'll find that so much quarreling, disagreement, culminating in violence takes place around or after midnight by people who are in drunken or intoxicated states. But that's the way of the world, to quote Congreve, right? Wrote us a play or story called The Way of the World. But as Krishna also says in the Gita, oh, what does it say? Trivedimam sumapa putapa pa yagyar isva svargatam parteyante. The three Vedas, and the other one I said, Tri-Veda, anyway. What does it say in the Vedas? Like, if you take the Soma Rasa, you can get elevation to the heavenly planets. And I just noticed the other day, because there's an expression, lotus eaters. And you always hear that. And I was thinking, is that like Indian people, like with their, like lotus pickle, they're taking that with some paratha or something? That's not what they mean. Lotus eater is a euphemism for people who are like so stoned or intoxicated on soma ras that they're incapacitated and dysfunctional or no longer useful. It became a euphemism for that. But interestingly, I mean, we could say, well, that's really cruel or damning. But in the Gita, in a more, we could say, generous or measured way, Krishna is saying, the Vedas speak of these things, and so most people think, well, it's in the Vedas. What could be wrong with that? Right. The tree of Veda can be deceptive in its appearance. The Veda Vadaratas are also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, parroting what is said in the Veda without catching the gist or the substance of what is being said there. In summary, fast forwarding, we come to Vedaischa Sarvaira Ahanga Eva Vedyo. In case it wasn't clear, Krishna is saying, Vedaischa Sarvaira, of all the Vedas, Ahanga Eva Vedyo. And see the word Veda as the Vedas and Vedyo, to know. I am what is to be known. Seems like a simple statement. Or you could say, wow, you know, he's on an ego trip. You know, he's touting his own glories. All of it, I am what is to be known. Is it like that? Is this someone who's full of themselves? Or is he revealing the facts of the situation to Arjuna? Sometimes Guru Maharaj would say in the sloka, Manmana Baba Mad Bhakto Majaji Mam Namaskuru Mame Vaishasi Yuktam Te Priyasi whatever. He said, shamelessly, Krishna is pleading with Arjuna. Arjuna, I'm everything. Worship me. So, but he's saying, of all Vedas emanate from his breathing, such as evinced in the Kurma avatar, the Jalanide, the rhythm. The rhythmic sounds of the ocean, like we're told, parallels the breathing of the Supreme Lord. That hypnotic rhythmic sound of the waves coming in and out. It's mentioned there in that Prishte Brahmyadamanda Mandaragiri Gravagya Kanduyanan slok. Which reminds, I mean, the person from England, correct? Nityananda, from England?
Yes, from England, London.
So there's a thing, and I digress momentarily, but there's a famous poem by Matthew Arnold called Dover Beach. And we've heard, most people have heard of the White Cliffs of Dover. And it's, I'm also not a geologist or geographer, but I believe the nearest portion of like France and England, this channel there, as it were, like, I've taken them. There were boats, hovercrafts, etc., to go from Calais in France, and you'd end up in Dover. So, oh, here's the White Cliffs of Dover, and this is what inspired Matthew Arnold to write a poem entitled Dover Beach. But his Dover Beach is a lament. Whereas the sloka in the Bhagavatam, praising the Kurma avatar, is perhaps it's pointing to what Matthew Arnold was lamenting for the loss of, ultimately. And that was, he said, and I'm paraphrasing now because I haven't committed this to memory, but he was saying first, the sea of faith was once, enveloping the world. And so remember, the waves are going in and out, and like Gravagya Kanduyanan, which is what reminded me, gravel, like the English word gravel and the Sanskrit word gravel, similar. So we know there's the sand, but there's like bigger, the like gravel, the stones. When the waves go out, you hear them. They make a sound. And he's saying, so this sea of faith, which was one, he's lamenting with the, from what was it? The romantics to the modernists, that the faith of people in the world was damaged. Their faith in God and divinity due to promoting humanism and humanistic values, humanistic sloganeering that I've mentioned so many times. As Solzhenitsyn said in his address, man, the disastrous deviation of the Enlightenment, removing God and placing man as the center in the center and as the measure of all things. Right? Replacing the infinite with the finite. Or in democracy, any amount of finite get together and have a consensus, and we'll follow that. Right. So he observing that not just individually, but collectively, the faith, and by faith we mean in God and divinity, right, was damaged by humanism. And he's saying, so that sea of faith which once enveloped the world, now I only hear its long withdrawing roar, which is what's the word? Embodied metaphorically in the sound of the as the waves go out, and you hear that gravel. That's what it reminded him of. And he says, perhaps to a woman he might be, or his companion, he's addressing this to, he says that the poet says, ah, love, let us be true to one another. For this world before us that appears to have so much hope, faith, has none of these things. Again, I'm paraphrasing. In other words, he's saying, let's not fool ourselves about what the world is. And that, and he uses this expression, we are here on a darkling plane. It's unusual language in modern English, but a darkling plane. And he compares our movements to like, ships passing in the night. That's the world before us. Right? So due to the proliferation of humanistic, so-called humanistic values and sloganeering expressed, and democracy and different forms of government, they try to seduce the people into thinking that you'll find your fortune in this world in through expressing your individual freedom in this world. You'll achieve, in Hegelian language, self-determination, self-realization, right? You'll assert your actual identity. But Guru Maharaj said three planes we conceive: the world of exploitation, world of renunciation, world of dedication. Jnanis, koti karmanishta madhye ek jnani shrestha. Basically saying one jnani is better than 10 million karmis. That seems rough. You know, that's like a brutal assessment, but it's there. Koti karmanishta madhye, among 10 million karmis. Ek jnani shrestha, one jnani is better. Why? Because they've realized, they're not chasing, they realize this is an illusion. It's not worth your time, energy, effort. They've come to that realization. And we see they're experts at criticizing and identifying what is wrong, but in indicating what is right, that they prove themselves inadequate. Like the one critic who pointed out, amongst other literary critics who write book reviews in the modern world, and he said, and they hide behind expressions like, they're talking about some writer and they say, he deals with the big questions, but doesn't insult the reader's intelligence by offering answers. Available on Amazon. So yes, again, he's saying, this is wrong, God, oh, life is so meaningless, the futility of existence, man stares into chaos and discovers his character. But, all right, so you've identified certain aspects of the negative world. So jnanis say, so renounce that. Right? Don't chase after that. Give that up. Say, then what should we strive for? Oh, who knows? Nobody knows. Right. The world of exploitation, jivo jiva shijivanam, where one living being lives at the expense of another. It's unavoidable here. Right. Like, who is it in India? The Jains wear a mask so you don't inhale any living beings, even a glass of water. You know, you should sweep the seat before you sit. This kind of thing. Right. Still, you will inadvertently kill others. Why not just say it? It happens all the time. It's part of existence. So, again in the Gita, yagya shishtashino shanto muchantai savrakilbashai. So with the basic necessities of life, they have to become Krishnaized or spiritualized, like eating, prasadam, within certain parameters, these things are offerable. So the bad news is we're living in the world of exploitation. We're exploiting others as an unavoidable consequence of existence. Right? The cat will eat the little fish in the lotus pots. Because I'm wondering, where have they gone? And I saw the cat the other day sitting there and drank a little water, but stayed extra long. And I said, what is the cat doing? Somebody said, oh, she's drinking water. I said, for 5 minutes, staring without moving and not drinking? That's why they say about their sly or their devious. But that's just one example. Jivo jiva sanjivanam. One in this world, one living being lives at the expense of others. And whether it was Hieronymus Bosch or another artist, the painting, you can look it up. But big fish eat little fish. Could be Bruegel. But and it's a painting. It's comical in appearance, but actually profound. And you see one, a big fish eating a little fish, a bigger fish eating that. They're all half in the mouths of others. And he's saying, that's what the world is. And why it's a good painting is because it's true. Right? But it looks absurd, but it's true. Jivo jiva shijivanam. One living being lives at the expense of another. You cannot avoid exploitation. So that's recognizing the world that we live in, as alluded to here. But is it possible from within the world of exploitation and being a person who's covered by layers and layers of exploiting tendency, is there any hope for such a person to transition from here to the world of dedication? And the contention of the Krishna consciousness movement is yes. As Guru Maharaj said, Om means a big yes. What you're searching for, what your heart is searching for, which is a world that is free from exploitation, where there's a world that you thrive by dedication. Here, you only thrive by exploiting others. Darwinian evolution, survival of the fittest. There, you thrive by giving, self-giving and self-sacrifice and dedication to others. Something in our heart says that such a world exists. So we heard Srila Guru Maharaj with the Vedic refrain, the Upanishadic refrain. Srinvantu vishe amritasya putra. Right? Amritasya putra. You can imagine, I mean, children of nectar. Saying, you are children of the nectar world. What is that? We mentioned the Kurma avatar in that pastime. When I ask Guru Maharaj, why is that given? At the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, because ostensibly, and it's at the Suvarnabhumi airport when you pass through immigration, and it's not just most popular, but the most substantial pastime represented throughout Southeast Asia, and he can concur, confirm that, having spent so much time in Angkor Wat, where it's the motif for the major part of the temple complex. So I asked, why is it given there? He's saying, because ostensibly the devas and asuras, the gods and demons, are out to get nectar. That's their pursuit. And what we know, the word... One word for nectar in Sanskrit is amrita, but it's based upon mrityu, like that Badal Prabhu in Kolkata. His name is actually Mrityunjoy. Badal is his nickname. So Mrityunjoy means one who conquers over death. So amrita means life-giving nectar. It's the so-called nectar of immortality that you conquer death. So the asuras, they know no matter how good your situation is in this world, you have to die. The devatas know the same thing, and they've got it made in heaven, right? Back to that kinye punye martyalokam vishanti, the sloka vihon. They ascend to swargalokam, and then what happened? Kinye punye, they fall down again into the martyalok, because they exhaust their pious credits, right? 10,000 years on average in swargaloka, then pious, you know, your credit runs out, and then back down to the earth, sometimes through rain. There may be more than one meaning to devashnan. Sometimes they come down in the form of raindrops and then enter grains and begin a life cycle. But, so they know there's an end to their heavenly enjoyment. The asuras know that there's an end to their asuric enjoyment. And not to say they're asuras, but the Google people come to mind, whose motto is, used to be, now they, I think they deleted it, was, what was it? Don't be evil or don't do evil? Something like that. So they realize that what they really think is too radical for the average people to consume or get their heads around. So they will say, you know, for example, like, we scanned all the books of the world so you can read them. You know, well, thank you. But you can't. You know how many books there are? Even if they're all available, there's no way you could read them all. But there is something that could read them all. And it would be a highly advanced robot / computer can scan the contents of all the books. And that's really what they wanted. Because they think, well, that would put it in a good position to for decision making. But that's one side point, but here's the point I meant to make. One of the heads who was born into an AI family, is an AI aficionado, Larry Page, said at a conference when people said, wouldn't it be good if you could discover a cure for cancer? You know, direct yourself to that. He said, yes, that would be very good. He said, but what would be better is to cure death. And people were like, what? So that's actually the project. Interesting. But they realize, you know, if you come and say, our company's intention is to eliminate death, then people will laugh or think you're crazy, like the so-called mad scientists. But instead they say, oh, we'll discover a cure for cancer, scan all the books so you can read them and help you get from the airport to your destination with our map program. You know, thank you, Mr. Google. But they also realize you have to die. You can be a billionaire, but you still have to die. Like Guru Maharaj said, you might be a billionaire, but you could and you can eat whatever you want, and you wake up one morning and you have no appetite. Like what Gurudev called appetitis. So you can have anything you want. You wake up, you don't have an appetite. You're like, you're sick. That you can't change. So there, in other words, there are inherent difficulties the human condition, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. And both sides know this, the devas and the asuras. And I'm just mildly teasing to refer to the tech people as asuras, but it's almost typical asuric behavior. Ugra karma, according to Krishna. He impersonates asuras in the Bhagavad Gita. Like people like to do impersonations. Krishna impersonates the asuric mentality. Ishvaroham hung bogi siddhova hum balavan suki. He's impersonating them. He said, what do they think? Ishvaroham, I'm in control. Right? Aham bogi, I'm the enjoyer. Siddhoham, I'm perfect. Balavan, powerful. Suki, and happy. And people like me. You should see my likes on Facebook. Because we think asuras like have two fangs and they're like some exaggerated caricature in a Bollywood movie. You know, the bad guy. Or in the movies at the turn of the century. But asuras could be polite, pay their bills on time, and send their kids to good schools. Like Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Right. So my point is, both sides realize we have to deal with this. So as they sometimes do, like, let's form an alliance. How about it? We grab this celestial serpent, wrap it around the Mandara mountain, and churn this ocean of kheer, or milk, as you meant, and get that nectar. The kheer side. Let's, you want it, we want it. And, you know, we can share it. Right. They don't yet know about Mohini Murti. But, and Kormadev will have to come, and I'm not going to tell the whole pastime here, but my point is, they're both searching for that. And as Guru said, Amrita, the Bhagavatam is not about some generic spiritual concept like immortal life, living forever. Living forever, you can say from the material point of view, immortal life from the so-called religious spiritual point. Is that the message of the Bhagavatam? Follow this and you'll live forever. Embrace this concept and you'll live forever. And do what? Like the Greek myth where the person asked for immortality but forgot to ask to be eternally youthful? Mukti arhitvanyata rupam svaropena vivastiti. We're told we have a prospect in the immortal world of a life of love with Krishna in a form, divine form, our actual self-determination, self-expression, swarup that's suitable for loving exchange with Krishna. So, Amrita, Guru Maharaj said, since it's what in the context of the Bhagavatam, it cannot be generic, off-the-shelf immortality. But what is being revealed here is that Madhura Rasa is the ultimate nectarine substance. So I like to think that Matthew Arnold in Dover Beach is alluding to this. If you take that idea of the sea of faith to its natural and ultimate conclusion, but we're told, from within this world of exploitation, that and even that has an expiration date on it, you have time to, you know, Hrishi Kena, Hrishi Kesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite, to, in our lives, what we normally do, there's a way that you can, in Prabhupada's language, engage your senses in the servant of the service of the master of the senses, Hrishikesh. What does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say in his song? Jiva na hoilo shesh na bhajile Hrishikesh. That without this, life is a waste. Right? Krishna's Hrishikesh means that you get to use your senses in his service, as opposed to the stereotypical idea about spiritual culture or monasticism, that it's a life of denying pleasure and sensory deprivation. Like an image comes to my mind of, you know, the Zen monastery where, you know, the monk, they're meditating, and if you start to nod out, as people have been known to do, that someone walking, you know, they whack you over the head or shoulder with a whacker. For I don't know the Japanese word. Whereas in Gulliver's Travel by Jonathan Swift, there are four worlds he travels to. There's one world he goes to, and this is akin to the Gyanis. They have these scholars there, and they're always walking around lost in thought. And then when two of them meet each other, they're both lost in thought. And so they're unable to keep appointments or do anything practical. So they have these assistants who have, like, you know, we've seen it, you know, the goat bag? Like sometimes in India, you see them carrying water in that, and, you know, I don't know what the technical term is for a goat bag, you know, but you get the idea. They have them in certain parts of Russia where they make kefir.
Yes.
And they put them inside, and the family members, when you walk by, you look, like, shake it up a little bit, like give a punch to the goat bag, and that makes it coagulate or whatever. So you know what I'm talking about. So these attendants, when the scholars are lost in their thought and don't realize they have an appointment to make or some practical thing to do, some bodily necessity, whatever it might be, their attendants hit them over the head with the goat bag. And then they go, oh, you know, I have to go. So, Gyan, the heart is not searching for knowledge. That's intellectualism, mind, intellect. Not the knowledge is not the domain of the heart. Unless we talk about Dibya Gyan. Dibya Gyan Hriday Prakashito, that divine revelation. And which is what? It's not knowing something. It's not data transfer or making certain information available. Right. But what are we told in the beginning? Tene Brahma Hrida. Guru Maharaj used the expression, and it was favorite to Gurudev, heart-to-heart transaction. It doesn't say, and from the mind of Krishna to the mind of Brahma, this data was transferred. Right. This information was transferred. This knowledge was not like that. But it says, Tene Brahma Hrida. As Yeats said, in the deep heart's core, in the core consciousness, Sada, what is it? It has your name in it, the sloka. Okay. Anarpita charim chirat karne avatirna kama samar pai tamana todra sam sabakti sriyam Hari Purata Sundar Duty Sandeepa Kadamba Sandeepita. Sandeep means to give illumination. Sada Hridaya Kandare Spuratu Vasachinandana. May he appear in your deep heart's core. That means in the most sacred inner region of the heart. From that heart, heart to heart, from the heart of Krishna to the heart of the devotee. That is Krishna consciousness. And fortunately for us, even within this world of exploitation, Brahmanda Brahmite, wandering the length and breadth of the world of exploitation, Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, some jivas are so fortunate to come in connection with, you know, authorized agents of the Absolute and engage in this heart-to-heart transaction. Guru Krishna Prashadi Pai. Prashad, Prashad Aleshanu Grihita Evahi. Gopinathacharya tells Sarvabhauma, hey, look, you know everything, but you don't know that who's lying before you and the Asta Sattvika Vikar state of Mahabhav is Swayam Bhagavan himself. That escaped you and you're learning. Your unparalleled command of the scriptures, an intellectual understanding. But you can quote some slokas, I can quote. Sometimes Gurudev would say, they go, they quoted this sloka, and he's like, they are quoting and going to hell. Right. So you can quote, I can quote. He said, but atapite deva padambuja dvaya prasadalesh anugrihita evahi. Prasadalesh means, like we say, a little prasad. Without a little bit of prasad, a little bit of mercy, you won't get it. Doesn't matter how big a scholar you are. You can be a Sat Darshan Pandit, as one of Guru Maharaj's teachers was. That means like six ontological black belts in the different philosophies of India. And Guru Maharaj, as an innocent student, he is 22, 23, said to this 80-year-old man or something like, in a joyous way, he said, oh, why don't you direct your intellect towards the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Dev? And he said, my boy, it is not a question of intellectualism. You've got to have some mercy. So what did Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur say? And a very beautiful verse Prabhupada liked very much. Everyone likes it. Dante nidaya trinakam pariornapatya kritva chakaku ahangi tatsatam brinimi he sarva sakalam eva vihaya durad chaitanya chandra charane kurutanuragan. Prabodhananda, who's growing, said very fervent prayer, Astasaki Tungavidya, says, taking a straw between my teeth and falling at your feet, I'm begging you, my dear sir, you are so learned, you are so knowledgeable, you are so generous, that I ask one request from you, and your, you know, renowned generosity, one favor I ask of you. Oh, what is that? Forget everything you know and turn your attention toward the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's my only request. Forget everything and focus on this. Redirect yourself. And you will find something extraordinary, wonderful, and as Guru would say, heart-swallowing there. So it is by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, our Guru Varga, moving in this plane, the apparent world of exploitation, agents of the land of dedication have descended here. Like the song, Guru Maharaj always asks Gurudev to begin any holy occasion or celebration with, E mana durmati sangsara bitore. My mind got me into this trouble. This world is about that, right? Listening to the mind, right? But you're so merciful, you sent your devotee into this world to rescue me. And, you know, Nitgaur and Nityananda and your agents are conducting so many fallen souls like ourselves from this plane back to the your divine abode, that realm. So, recognizing our karmically acquired predisposition toward forgetfulness or what you could call, what did Prabhupada call it? Poor spirit. There's a word like that. That's another thing. But like, sometimes he called our causeless unwillingness to surrender. Still, by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnav, we've been given some opportunity in the form of seva or service, and by embracing that as much as we can, then we can successfully transition from here to there. What Prabhupada also called the successful termination of human life, and what Guru said, and then the golden form, divine form, this rupa coming out and entering the service world, the seva mayoyam loka. Hare Krishna. Hari Harai Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha.
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 Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha.
Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha.
Gopal Govinda Ram Sima Sudan.
Gopal Govinda Ram Srimadu Sudan.
Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan.
Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan.
Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra.
Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra.
Garadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Gadadhara Shivasari Gora Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raguna.
Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raguna.
Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raguna.
Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raguna.
Echai Gochai Kori Charana Vandan.
Echai Gosai Kuri Charana Vandan.
Jaha Hoite Vignanash Abhishta Puran.
Jaha Hoite Vignanash Abhishta Puran.
Echai Gochai Jar Muni Tarodas.
Echai Gosai Jar Muni Tanadas.
Tansaba Sabara Pada Renu Mora Panchagras.
Tansabara Pada Renu Mora Panchagras.
Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sane Vas.
Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sane Vas.
Janame Janame Mor Dehi Abhilas.
Janame Janame Namo More Abhilash.
E chai go chai jabe braje koilo bas.
E chai go sai jabe braje koilo bas.
Radha Krishna nitya lila korilo prakash.
Radha Krishna nitya lila korilo prakash.
O anande boro hari braja vrindavan.
Anande boro hari braja vrindavan.
Shri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majayaman.
Shri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majayaman.
Shri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriya.
Shri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriya.
Hari Nam Sankirtan Kohe Narottamada.
Hari Nam Sankirtan Kohe Narottamada.
Hey Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Gaur Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Gaur Hari Bo.
Jai Gaur Hari Bo, Hari Bo.
Hari Bo,
Nitai Gora Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Nitai Gora Hari Bo.
Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Raja Kacharya Satyavar Sati Sri Srimad Shri Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai.
Jai
Om Vishnu Pad Shri Bhakti Rakak Shri Nar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki
Jai.
Bhagavan Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki
Jai.
Jai Sapatikar Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Jiu Ki
Jai.
Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Bhupanuga Guru Varga Ki
Jai.
Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki
Jai.
Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudi Gopa Bhaktivinoda Ki
Jai.
Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki
Jai.
Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadip Dham Ki
Jai,
Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Ki Jai, Sri Gupta Govardhan Ki
Jai,
Ganga Devi, Jamuna Devi, Bhakti Devi, Tulsi Devi Ki
Jai,
Om Vishnu Pad Vishva Varena Sri Laisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki
Jai,
Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Madhacharya Brinda Ki
Jai,
Jai Srila Bhakti Bimala Avadhut Maharaj Ki
Jai,
Jai Sriman Sandeep Krishna Prabhu Ki
Jai,
Jai Sri Maheshwari Didi Ki
Jai,
Sri Janvi Kumari Ki Jai, Sri Madhavi Lata Devi Dasi Ki
Jai,
Seva Vrinda Ki
Jai,
Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki
Jai,
Nitai Go Premanande.
Hari Bo, Jai Vishnu Bhatshava Bhakti Sudhir Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Dandavats from Rasheshwari Didi, Ivoti Brazil, Suchitra Didi from St. Petersburg and Ananda Lila.